I saw a tweet on Twitter which asked an all-important question this week. To paraphrase, why did Jamaicans have to bring bun and cheese into the death and resurrection of Jesus on Good Friday? And I thought, what a great idea for another food episode. It's been a while, and as always, if you're hungry, I would suggest maybe getting some food before you listen to this, or listen to this whilst you're eating something. But basically, come back in a time where you're not already hungry, salivating, or thinking about food. But if you're good and your belly's full, then welcome back to another episode of the History Hotline. My name is Deanna Lynn Cook, and as always, I'll be your host today. Welcome to the History Hotline, a direct line to a better understanding of all things Black history and beyond. Now, before we get into the full story, the full history, and it's a somewhat disparate history, if that's the right word for it, of bun and cheese, I will first tell you what exactly bun and cheese is. Bun is a kind of spiced bread baked in a loaf tin and sliced, as opposed to actually being a small, round, bun-shaped bake that you might be anticipating or thinking about. They are made fairly typically with flour, butter, and lots of sugar, as well as spices, maybe that's not the right word, like fragrant things like vanilla and cinnamon and nutmeg. And they also, which is a bit less typical, have molasses in them, which gives it the dark brown colour, as well as the sweetness. And it uses Guinness or a similar stout as the raising agent. The flavours are rich and fruity. Bun should contain raisins and sometimes cherries too, but I've noticed depending on where you get your bun from, the raisin to like loaf and dough ratio can be very poor. I like a lot of raisins. Homemade bun definitely tastes better as a smell wafts around the house and into the room when it comes out of the oven. It is simply to die for. They're normally glazed with honey or a somewhat similar sweet substance when they come out of the oven to soften the edges, and it makes it really super soft and somewhat sticky as well when you're slicing it. But there's no crust to a bun, is what I'm saying with that honey trick. According to my research, bun is not only eaten in Jamaica, and if thinking about the Caribbean, but also a few other Caribbean islands, but I couldn't find them named. It was kind of like, oh, you know, Eastern Caribbean countries might also eat it. And I feel like it is a kind of departure from tradition, bun and cheese, as other islands, and of course in Britain, continue to eat hot cross buns, following that British tradition, whereas Jamaica has taken this departure and adapted that recipe to something completely new and different, and that is how bun and cheese was born. The history of the hot cross bun is very much central to the story, because bun is an adaptation of that. Meaning, just like other foods I've discussed on this podcast before, whether it is ackee and saltfish, I'm trying to think, sorrel or hibiscus drink, depending on what you know it as. What else have I done? I sort of black cake, fruit cake, rum cake, whichever one you want to call it. Again, another bake that kind of centres off a British tradition of baking. Basically, this is, in a way, another reminder of the Caribbean's colonial past, specifically Jamaica's, when we think about why hot cross buns were eaten and how that transitioned into Easter bun. Now, there are many theories as to why hot cross buns are eaten around this time of the year. And if I'm honest with you, I don't buy all of them, but I'm going to share them with you anyway, and maybe you can make up your mind of what seems the most plausible and realistic. Now, allegedly, the origins of hot cross buns date back centuries. Many Christians today see it as like an imitation of unleavened bread eaten during Passover. That's the one I don't buy, because there's definitely raisin agents in bun and hot cross buns. So I don't know how, I guess baking something and the tradition of baking bread might be something that followed on, but not unleavened bread. Others date it back to the era of the Egyptians and the Greeks. Again, I don't know how that works. Who also had small loaves for their religious devotions and worship. So I guess we're thinking about the history of baking in the context of a religious practice. I guess that is not too difficult to conceive and to think about. A story that comes up a lot when I have been doing my research about these hot cross buns is that the cross on the bun represents the crucifixion, hence the time of year that they're eaten. But also I have seen something about the Romans having a cross to represent the four phases of the moon because it quarters the bun. And then that developed into an interpretation of the crucifixion and the cross that Jesus died on. So hot cross buns also date back to this story from 1361. When a monk named Father Thomas Rockcliffe began this tradition of giving hot cross buns to the poor in St. Albans. And I think there are some sources that suggest this is the case. And Protestants considered this a Catholic tradition and attempted to stop the practice. And then later down the line, Elizabeth I passed a law permitting bakeries to sell them only on festivals such as Easter and Christmas. And this develops into a song which I definitely heard either at school or growing up, about hot cross buns, one a penny, two a penny, hot cross buns. I'm not really sure, where I heard it, but that's definitely something that jumped out when I read it, in an article about hot cross buns. I was like, that sounds really familiar. But essentially, hot cross buns have been a part of the British kind of Easter story and the Easter food history for a very long time. And whilst it might be hard to kind of pin down and pinpoint that exact moment where hot cross buns become, you know, an Easter tradition and a staple within Easter festivities, it is a fact that hot cross buns do pop out around this time of the year. In the supermarkets and wherever else. And I've noticed actually hot cross buns are starting to get a little upgrade. Should we call it an upgrade? Flavours. I've had an apple hot cross bun, apple and cinnamon. I've had chocolate, a double chocolate hot cross bun. I've seen all kinds of flavours of hot cross bun. And maybe that is just exactly how the Jamaican bun developed over time. People started adding their own flavour, adding their own twist, and that tradition eventually sticks. Hot cross buns are very popular across the English-speaking Caribbean. Obviously another clue to its colonial legacy, because if it was popular in other parts of the Caribbean that were colonised by others, then you could probably link it to more recent Caribbean traditions. However, it is very closely associated with the English-speaking Caribbean. In Trinidad and Tobago, they are typically eaten without filling. In Guyana, they're often filled with cheese, which is really interesting. And I also wonder where cheese comes into the story. Jamaicans eating their bun also with cheese. In my humble opinion, bun needs no cheese. I just think it's perfect as it is. However, I do understand, and I do still sometimes eat it with cheese, because there's like a, I guess that flavour combination of the saltiness of a cheese and then the sweetness of the bun, and it just cuts through and it makes for a very convenient little sandwich situation that also satisfies a sweet tooth, because it is a sweet sandwich even though it's got the cheese inside. Some people put butter on their bun as well. Bun, butter and cheese. Some people just have it with butter. Some people toast the bun. I've seen that as well. Not a fan of toasted bun. I do prefer it just on its own. Bun originally, as most bakes do, start off as something that's made in the home, but it's now supplied by big commercial bakers in the Caribbean year round. You know, you can pick up a bun any time of the year in Britain as well as Jamaica. And it just shows, I think, how the diaspora have carried this food with them. It can easily be located in the Caribbean, of course, in the US, in Canada and Britain. You can get whole loaves, you can get the like mini ones that kind of are a meal in themselves, in like single packets, or you could buy the whole one and you take it home and slice it up. But I think the fact that it's something that Jamaicans have carried with them as they've migrated all over the world is really important to the story of Easter, as well as migration histories and histories of the Jamaican diaspora. Now, I came here to answer the question of how bun and cheese came to mark Jesus's death. And my research so far suggests that it was the hot cross bun that started it, and an English tradition that started it. And this is adapted into being Jamaican bun. And it's the bake of choice on Good Friday, following on from this point of the cross potentially representing the crucifixion on a hot cross bun. And I think that nursery rhyme came up in my research quite a bit as something that peddlers would use in the Caribbean, in Jamaica as well, to sell their treats. Hot cross buns, one a penny, two a penny, hot cross buns. And I think this nursery rhyme and these buns must have made their way to Jamaica, obviously via the British, who carry their traditions with them when they colonised the island. Of course they did. And over time, there's been a spin on this particular custom. Now, there's other Easter and specifically Good Friday traditions that exist in Jamaica. And I have realised that there's a lot of things that you kind of take for granted culturally. I think in all cultures, you just think, oh, you just do that. We just do that. Why is always on my mind. But in this case, it's never a why that I've asked. But one thing you won't find in a Jamaican's home on Good Friday is meat being served. It's a day for fish, whether that be in the form of ackee and saltfish or escovitch fish or a little bit of steamed fish. Meat isn't typically consumed on Good Friday. And I think it follows on from the practice of fasting fully throughout the season of Lent, which starts after Shrove Tuesday and continues to Good Friday and then into Easter Day. And it is a time to mark reverence and kind of sit in a space of sacrifice in order to mark the time where Jesus faced temptation from the devil in the desert. And this, I think, initially was a practice of fasting during the whole time of Lent, definitely fasting meat, as it was believed that meat was kind of linked to indulgence and to kind of simplify your life and focus in on God, you were to remove meat from the diet. Some people fasted, I guess strictly is the right word, but, you know, fasted more things, sacrificed more things. However, the practice of a fully fasting during Lent isn't something that's as common as much, I would say, now, especially in Britain. However, something is typically given up, something is typically sacrificed, whether it's something that's not that great for you, like chocolates or alcohol or sweets or snacks. Some people obviously still do not partake in eating meat during that time, but this is something in Jamaica that is typically done whereby on Good Friday, because, you know, Jesus died, you're not to consume flesh of another animal. And that is just something that has just been common. So Good Friday, as much as it's not, you know, a typically celebrated is definitely the wrong word, but a celebrated day, it's a day of reverence. It's a day to mark kind of the end of a particular way in the Christian calendar. There are food practices that come along in Jamaica with that, and that is eating bun and cheese. And it's eating fish. And it's kind of a preparation and a time of reflection before you get to Resurrection Sunday. And it's always very interesting to me the ways in which we think about food and the way we carry our traditions through food. I think it's one of the best ways to carry culture and to carry traditions, especially as you see a Jamaican diaspora that pretty much has as many Jamaicans outside of Jamaica as inside. I think it's like 2.9 or 2.8 8 million Jamaicans that don't live in Jamaica, that are outside of Jamaica and the descendants of, and about 2.9 million Jamaicans on the island. So, you know, it's interesting to see how these traditions carry on, how they migrate with people, and what we do with them next. You know, maybe in a couple hundred years' time, it won't be bun and cheese. It'll be, I don't even know. I can't even think. My brain can't create a whole new dish. But we might see this, as well as hot cross buns, developing in the future. I just wanted to go back to a point I made about the kind of, not commercialization of bun, but the commercial big bakers that are making bun, especially in the Caribbean. And in an article I read on the BBC, Laura Adderley, who is a professor of African diaspora history, noted an important relationship, I think, with Jamaica's sense of attachment to bun and cheese. And then this kind of pride, and I quite like this idea, this sense of pride that Caribbean people take in creating something new, taking something from that colonial past and reshaping it and rethinking it into something that suits them better. She notes that particularly, and I quote, over the last 100 years, people in the Caribbean and especially in Jamaica have been active about this business of making both a regional culture, even before independence, and a national culture. There's now a sense of Jamaican ownership over spice bun, end quote. She talks about the dish and the evolution being a fundamental characteristic of Jamaican food, and gives other examples as well. And I really like this, the example of curry originally deriving from India, and jerk spices from Caribbean indigenous Taino people, and Jamaicans taking those spices that are abundant, that are popular, that are easy to access, mixing them with the existing flavours and creating new dishes, in the same way that they've done that with bun. Bun, in terms of the difference with a hot cross bun, the hot cross bun inside is really pale. Bun is quite dark. It's paler on the inside than on the outside, but it uses molasses to get a darker colour. There's ingredients like nutmeg, vanilla, cinnamon, mixed spice and that kind of thing to create a really rich dish. And the flavours continue to evolve. There are so many Caribbean bakeries in Jamaica and also in Britain and the US that sell bun and have done so for decades. And that is another food history on the History Hotline. I really hope you have enjoyed it. I hope it answered the question. I still don't feel satisfied about my answers as to where the cheese comes from. And in this research, I also heard about somebody that's like putting shredded cheese in between the bun and like baking it like a grilled cheese. I'm yet to try it. I'm not convinced. It doesn't sound great to me. But as I said, we never know where the innovation will go. Maybe that is what we'll be eating in the next 20, 30, 40, 50 or 100 years. Grilled bun and cheese, as in a grilled cheese with bun and cheese. Crazy. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode. I hope you have a wonderful week, and I will be back in a fortnight for the next episode. Thank you for listening. Goodbye. That's it for another episode of the History Hotline. If you enjoyed it, please rate and review us on whatever podcast platform you listen to, or tell a friend to tell a friend. To continue the conversation, follow us on social media at The History Hotline on Instagram and at The History HL on Twitter. The History Hotline is hosted by me, Deanna Lynn Cook. Research and marketing done by Zakia Riaz. Production by Waylon Mackenzie Witter. And original music provided by Royal Sounds. Sponsored by Musetopia. History Hotline.